Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
We'll explore USDA's acreage and quarterly grain stocks reports today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Greg Thessen of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Our panelists today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Generally speaking, Friday's USDA reports were considered friendly by the trade. Does friendly represent, in this case, more than one day's worth of upward movement in the corn and soybean markets? Matt Bennett.
Well, I think a lot of people were talking about the acreage numbers, and if they weren't real drastic in either way, that they wouldn't be traded for long. I think today we didn't trade just acreage, I imagine. There's a little weather mixed in, and that's probably what we're going to trade on Monday. So I think if we come out with a weather forecast on Monday that, you know, and rainfall totals over the weekend that were good, and the forecast with more rain in the, especially the western corn belt, that, you know, they're going to forget about the fact that there was only 1.4 switch versus what, you know, traders were thinking, closer to 2 million.
Ed Dunn?
I think the numbers were probably traded the first 15 minutes to 30 minutes, and then I got to agree with Matt. If we would have had a wet and cool forecast come in, we probably wouldn't have held the gains real well. But considering there are concerns of heat and questionable rainfall total, I think the weather took over towards the end of the session, and that's what we're going to be focusing on Monday.
And Pete Manhart.
I totally agree with that. I think we're into weather now. I think the change was in acreage was a little bit less than expected as far as the less acres, but I think the weather is the big thing.
Weekly trade finished like this in Chicago at the board. July oats at 212 and three quarters. We're up 10 and three quarters for the week. July wheat at 380 and a half on the high side, the low at 360. July wheat settled at 371 and a half. They were up 8 and a quarter from last week. The SEPs at 396 were up 14 and a half. July corn had a high this week of $2.36. The low there at $2.21. They finished 7 and a quarter cents higher from last week, July at 235 and a half. In the December, your new crop settled 5 cents higher at $2.60 and a quarter cents. USDA's acreage figure Friday morning fell within the trade estimates at 79.366 million acres. It's about 1.3 million acres bigger than what farmers said they would plant back in March, but smaller than last year's corn crop by more than 2 million acres. Have you done the calculations yet to show just how big this crop might be? And it's okay to give a range. For comparison's sake, last year the U.S. farmers harvested 11.1 billion bushels. How much will they harvest this fall? Ed Dunn.
Well, I think you're still going to see a crop of over 10 billion. Just based on, you know, the condition reports are showing where we're very similar to last year. So you have to feel yield potential at this point can match last year's numbers. So I think it's very safe to trade something over a 10, maybe close to 10.5. But getting to 11 is not going to happen with this kind of a cutback in acres.
I think you're looking at 10 to 10.5. And the big thing, corn, then, is the usage. What's the usage going to be? I think the usage is so good, and we're worried about the weather so much, that any really serious forecast will make things boom.
So we'll stay on the high end of that because this is the way I've written it. We have a 10.5 billion bushel crop and predicted usage of about 11.7 billion or thereabouts, with a carry-in that Darrell Good thinks could shrink just a bit based on the quarterly grain stocks report and ideas to domestic usage from the livestock industry will be better than predicted. What's the upside potential in the marketplace given a normal finish to the season?
Well, given a normal finish to the season, you know, say we come in with a 10.5, you know, if we end up taking carry out below 2 and then come in with a 10.5, I don't know. I think the corn market's going to have quite a bit of support under it. The upside, I don't think if we have normal weather, we can take the old highs out if we have normal weather.
Anybody else have an upside prediction that they'd like to share with us at this point under normal growing conditions, higher than the current highs at all?
No. I don't think we'll take out the old highs if we have normal weather, but any little tick of a forecast can push it right up there, even though we're having normal weather.
By the way, the quarterly grain stocks report showed 4.363 billion bushels on hand as of June the 1st. Matt, you're in the elevator business. What happens to old crop basis levels between now and September 1? And, yep, I got old crop corn to sell.
Well, you know, old crop, the basis is hung in there. Right now it's option at Decatur, so I think a lot of it just depends on where we go with the price on the board. I mean, if we go ahead and rally it up another 20 to 25 cents, I think basis is going to have to weaken some. I mean, there's still a lot of corn out there in the countryside. There's still a lot of corn in elevators. So, you know, it just kind of depends upon where we take the market. But I don't think that the basis is going to strengthen much, even if we don't take the market much higher. So, I don't know. I think that it's probably as good as it's going to be between now and fall.
And then once we get to harvest, do you think it will continue to widen out? I'm interested in the idea that you think that the basis is going to weaken. I understand, I guess, between now and for the old crop, between now and harvest. But once we get into new crop.
Well, I mean, a lot of it just flat out. You're talking old crop or new crop now?
Well, let's switch gears and talk. I was talking old crop, but let's talk about the new crop.
Well, new crop, the basis hasn't been that good. I think a lot of it's just going to depend upon, you know, what the crop ends up being. There's just, you know, a lot of variables there. If we end up having, you know, a 10-5 or better corn crop, then I don't think that the basis levels are going to have much chance of improving.
Any other comments on the basis levels, Ed?
I would agree with Matt that our upside potential is limited in the old crop because sooner or later these guys are going to have to get rid of the bushels that are still sitting on farm, and that's going to have to happen by SEP 1. So we may have 2 or 3 cents of upside and maybe 5 to 8 cents of downside, and that upside's probably in the next 3 to 4 weeks, and then we probably see the weakness. And as far as new crop basis goes, unless we see some crop problems in the heart of the Corn Belt here, basis levels aren't going to get a whole lot stronger. We don't have that new demand yet. The ethanol plants aren't running yet. The elevators still have plenty of old crop that they're carrying, plus farmer grain that has to move. We could have some basis problems at harvest, then see that sharp rubber band rebound once we get done.
How far along on new crop sales is strategic farm marketing?
60 to 65%.
Well, I was going to ask you a question. I'm only 30% along on corn priced. At what level are you willing to pull the trigger on sales again?
265 D's. We're 261 right now, so we're close.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to have people 50 to 70, and I've got people haven't sold a thing. But I think one of the scary things this fall is I've got some elevators have told me they could be plugged worse this fall than last fall because of all the corn that needs to go to market, and people are going to keep that, sell it for this fall or next January, and store the rest.
You agree with that? Are elevators just full, and they're scared that they're going to have way too much?
Yeah, there's still a lot of corn in elevators, definitely. You know, when here in early June, whenever we had fall delivery running at maybe in the 250 level and cash was lagging behind, there's a lot of guys that said, you know what, especially if they had stuff in the bin, they're just going to sell it for fall delivery. You know, and if they had it in the elevator, there was enough carry that they could sell it to the elevator. So there's going to be a lot of corn that's still going to be around. I totally agree with what Pete said.
Okay, Pete, I'm almost hesitant to ask this question, but I wrote it down already. So I was talking to a guy last night, and he thinks corn, based on his technical analysis, could pop over $4 in the coming marketing year. Let's just say you're bullish the corn market based on usage, and you'd like to protect that upside. What can you do on paper?
Well, to protect the upside, if you've sold what you think is too much, or if you're going to sell the rest of it, you can look at putting call option spreads on. I don't know if this is the time to sell puts or not, but you know, end of June or middle of June to the 1st of July is often a time when we make lows for the weather market. Depending on what the weather forecasts are, we could balloon up and go to some really good numbers, but we have to have serious damage. But looking at putting on vertical call spreads or looking at selling some puts when we are low to help make up some of that money that has maybe not been made because no cash sales were made yet.
We bought quite a few 240 SEP calls this week, and It's pretty, to me, I had several guys that are fairly bullish corn still, especially the guys that aren't getting any rain. And I know you can't just look out your back window, but we went ahead and bought some Tuesday, and those look pretty good right now. I think that really the only way to participate in it is in the options market, because this market's so volatile, it can run a guy out pretty fast.
Soy complex, July beans this week had a high of $6.50, the low at $5.66.50. They settled $5.94.75. We're up 14.25 from last Friday's settlement price. On the week, the November beans picked up 16 cents and settled at $6.22.50. USDA says farmers in this nation put 74.93 million acres in the ground this spring. That's on the low end of the trade estimates, lower than the March 31 planting intentions report, but still about 2.8 million more acres than last year. It doesn't sound so friendly in that context, and even worse if you put the record-sized 990 million bushel quarterly ending stocks figure on top of the big acreage figure. By the way, the second largest June 1 ending stocks on record was reported 20 years ago this month, back in 1986. So here's the question. How does the trade manage to see this uptick in the planted acreage year over year and the record-sized quarterly grain stocks report and be friendly rather than bearish?
Well, I think what came out of this report was they were expecting a bearish report. We sold off 30 cents in corn. We sold off 35, 40 cents in beans. And what happened? We didn't get that bearish report. And the weather also, there's some question marks to the forecast. So that caused the funds that had been selling, anybody that had been selling ahead of this report, to decide, I better start putting some positions back on. I didn't get the report I wanted. What I think the net effect of this is still, Todd, though, is our upside has got to be limited. We're 625 NOV beans. 648 high in early January. I don't think that comes out. And I think our downside could still be 5.5 on the November futures if we end up with a decent growing season.
I agree with that. And the thing you got to look at beans in the last 6 months, where have we been? We're in a 50-cent trading range back and forth. Right now, the acreage was less than expected, but we've got the weather factor. If you take the good to excellent ratings and put it on a chart, we're going to have a 3.7 billion crop, even with these acres, or a 3.5. If we have bad weather, we'll be under 3. So it really, the weather is a big factor, but also we haven't blown out either side. We haven't been able to kill the beans, but they also haven't been able to take off. I've got people I've heard saying beans at 5, and I've got people hearing beans at 7.50. I think we're in about a 50-cent range right now until something happens.
I'd agree with that. We have been trying to beat beans down all winter, and it's never been done. But I also agree with Ed. I just don't see that there's any way we can take out the old highs unless we have a significant weather rally. Probably the way I would see it would, if corn would maybe drag it up. Obviously a weather rally is going to affect both markets. But I just can't see beans rallying over the old highs.
Ed, tell me about total oilseed crops around the globe and what that looks like after today's release from USDA.
Well, I mean, we're still looking at burdensome supplies, and that's what's kind of scary is you sit and think, what happens to the markets if the commodity funds aren't in there and just owning commodities? Where is soybean oil today? Where is soybeans as a whole? We're still faced with phenomenal numbers there. But I think when you look at oilseed supplies, you need to look at South America and wonder how much are they going to cut back next year, Todd, with the financial problems that they've got facing them. I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel in the oilseeds, but it looks ugly for the next 6 to 8 months.
Well, I think we're really volatile, and we're going to stay volatile. Usage is tremendous. Stocks are tremendous. But if we have any little problem growing what we need, we're going to see lots more volatility.
As I sit here and listen to the three of you, I get the feeling that we're sounding a lot more bearish than maybe you are as you look at this marketplace. Am I reading that wrong on both corn and beans, or is it just that you're thinking that the levels we're at are right and that's where we're going to stay at this point?
Well, we're in a weather market right now, and I think that we need to have traps set for when it does bounce for whatever reason, we need to trap our prices. I still think we could really have, $2.20 corn this fall or less, and we could have $5 beans this fall. But we could also see it bounce up 20, 30 cents on corn and 50 cents on beans during the season to trap. And I think you have to have a plan ready to do that. I'm not totally bearish, but if you look at only supply, we got more than we need. If you look at usage, hey, we've got great usage, so what are the supply going to be from the weather?
With the demand the way it is in the corn market, I think we could easily see 20 to 30 cent rally. If we have major weather problems, I think it could be much more significant than that. You know, I agree with Pete. I just think that I would probably take it even higher. And I agree with the traps. You know, I mean, I've talked to a lot of my clients. Hey, if you want to sell 250, 260 fall delivery corn, make sure you put your offer in because it might trade, you know, to 260 during the trading session, and it's maybe not going to close there. It's just a very volatile market. But I'm not completely bearish corn, at least. I have a hard time not being bearish beans, though.
Well, let's go hunting down a crop that we can talk about the upside potential. Ed, maybe wheat at some point this time this week. We talked on air at least about Minneapolis. Wheat taking over the lead from Kansas City. Dave Dickey notes in our weekend newsletter, which you can subscribe to, by the way, at WILLAG.org, that KC wheat has traded and trended higher for the last 3 weeks in a row. Abandonment seems to have been high in the plains of the hard red winter wheat, and it's been dry in the western corn belt and the spring wheat growing regions. Is this market poised for an upside move?
I don't think there's any question. The only thing that tempered it today, Todd, in the excitement with corn and beans was the fact we picked up 700,000 wheat acres on today's acreage report. If we don't get that kind of an increase, wheat's double-digit higher today. Yeah, I think you're still going to see wheat futures, you know, continue to trade above $4 for a significant amount of time for the next couple of years' crops. And we continue to hear of producers, even in the heart of the Corn Belt, talk about adding another 60 or another 80 or another 120 acres of wheat for this next year because the input costs are so low and the prices are fantastic. So I think that trend's going to continue. But basis levels is where life gets ugly in the cash market.
Yeah, basis level on wheat. I mean, I'm hearing 40 cents to a dollar. And here I got locked in supposedly 426 or 420, and when I go in to sell it, it's a dollar less.
Is that because the grain elevators don't want it here in the Midwest that they want corn in storage, or is it some other reason?
A lot of grain elevators don't even store wheat. They just try to haul it out as soon as they get it. So, yeah, I think that's accurate right there.
And look at the cost of hauling it. Hauling it is costly, I mean, with the gas and all that, those prices.
Let's finish up with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, and then in 2 minutes we'll talk with Greg Thessen of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Live cattle at the Merc this week had a high at 86.65 for the June contract, the low at 83.30. Their settlement price, 84.55. They were up $1.67.5. The August feeders at 115.20 were up 5 even. July lean hogs, 74.40 on the high, the low at 71.15. They settled at 72.55, off 67.5 cents. And the July bellies at $99.97.5 were up $3.20 for the week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A broad trough of low pressure brought cooler than normal weather to Illinois this week, but also was responsible for thunderstorms almost every day. A series of smaller disturbances rotating through the trough over the eastern half of the country provided the lift in the atmosphere needed for the development of showers and thunderstorms. Rainfall was well above normal for the week across the northern third of Illinois and also a small portion of south-central Illinois, generally along I-70. The driest portion of the state this week was the far south, where little rain fell. 1 to as much as 3 inches of rain fell in parts of northern Illinois this week, with some amounts up to 2 inches in central Illinois. In central Illinois particularly, thunderstorms were scattered enough that some areas received good rainfall while others missed out completely. Temperatures this week were well below normal, averaging from 4 degrees below normal in southeastern Illinois to 6 degrees below normal in west and northwestern portions of the state. Hot, humid weather at the start of the long holiday weekend will start to moderate early in the week, with the possibility of cooler and drier air pushing through the northern two-thirds of Illinois by the 4th of July. Temperatures will then average near to slightly above normal the rest of the week. Showers and thunderstorms will be possible across Illinois this weekend into Tuesday, although by Tuesday, chances for rain will be best in the southern portions of the state. Rain chances should increase again across Illinois by the end of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. Greg Thessen is our guest today. He grew up in Jeff City, Missouri, on a diversified crop and livestock farm, graduated from Lincoln University in 1987, completed some additional statistic courses at Michigan State in 1994. Thessen began his career with the National Agricultural Statistics Service in Missouri, and in 1997 he was transferred to the headquarters in Washington, D.C., where he currently serves as the head of the field crops section in the crops branch for NASS and is responsible for the National Field Crop Statistics Estimation Program on acreage, yield, production, stocks, price, and value. The major publications prepared by the section include the monthly and annual crop production reports, quarterly grain stocks reports, the prospective plantings, and, of course, the June acreage report. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me today, Todd.
All right. So tell me, how is it that we managed to have both lower corn and soybean acres in this report?
Both corn and lower from March, I suppose you're talking about.
You bet.
Yeah, both lower on corn and soybeans, you look at some of the other crops, cotton up substantially. Also, as you mentioned earlier, more acres of spring wheat out there.
And then, if you could, this is the one thing we haven't discussed very much. Tell me a little bit about some of the other feed grains, so sorghum, barley, oats, those were all down?
Oats was actually up a little bit, but you're correct. Sorghum and barley were both down, actually, to record low levels this year. Both of those crops have been declining for quite a few years now.
Now this acreage report, when will you bring another one up? After harvest with a final, and then next year with another final? Or how much more tinkering will we do after this acreage report with acreage? And when?
Right. Our first chance would be in October. We've implemented in our October crop production report an opportunity to change the corn, soybeans, and other summer row crop acreage in October after we get some certified acreage data from the Farm Service Agency. So that would be the first chance that the planted acreage would change. Then at the end of the year in our January annual summary crop production report would be the next time, and then again a year later in January would have a chance to revise the numbers that we published in January of this year.
Greg, crop insurance continues to be a growing part of a producer's risk management program, and they have a reporting date of July 15th, and this year with the rains in May, it pushed everybody back, and I'm wondering, do you use certification of acres from FSA offices prior to the reporting date to estimate acres? And you mentioned October as to making that change. Well, if farmers have certified by July 15th, why wouldn't NASS be able to use a more accurate acreage count by, say, the August crop report to give everybody a better handle? How would that work hand in hand?
Yeah. You're right. In most of the Midwest, for sure, the certification date with Farm Service Agency is for the most part, into July, a few states, August 15th. We've actually tracked the data on a weekly basis the last few years, and even though those certification dates are earlier, it tends to, farmers still may certify after that date. As well as, the Farm Service Agency getting everything updated in their computer system. So we've tried to make sure that they've got everything in their system, and we've found that usually by October we're fairly confident on a crop like corn from the southern growing areas all the way up through the northern growing areas that all the states have a, fairly complete set of certification acreage data. And so that's the policy that we currently have in place.
Yeah, Greg, I've got kind of a couple questions here. First of all, on the wheat, I was just wondering if any of the abandonment that we keep hearing about was factored into this report. And then as far as corn goes, I didn't really look at the state by state. And I was just wondering, first of all, if you had any surprises as far as where the switches were and where were the biggest switches, just for all of us to be educated on that.
Yeah, on the wheat, we didn't change the winter wheat harvested acreage much. We already have a forecast out from our June crop production report. I think it was just down 0.2% from that report. So what we had picked up earlier, we'd pretty much accounted for all the abandonment on the winter wheat acres. As far as the corn goes, I guess biggest surprises, I guess, you know, we had expected, you know, looking at the intentions report, acreage to be down throughout the corn belt. You look at some of the states that were up, obviously North Dakota would kind of stand out. They're up 340,000 acres from last year. It seems like producers up there have such a diversity of crops they can plant from year to year. Looks like they're switching to corn and soybeans, because soybeans was up 850,000 in North Dakota, switching to those two crops from durum wheat as well as the other oilseed crops. I'd also, I guess, point out Minnesota, their acreage is unchanged from last year.
I have a question on harvested acreage as kind of a follow-up on that. Last year, harvest acreage was a lot closer than normal to the planted acreage, and this year you've spread that out. Do you think that, that's correct at this point, I suppose?
Well, as you talked about, or I read, I guess, we're not sure there. We're just asking farmers what they intend to harvest at this point. And, you know, each month we can update that figure. But, you know, the last year, you're right, we were a lot closer with the, you know, excellent yields we had last year. Will it change by the end of the year? It's very possible.
Anything else to add, Greg, before we let you go for the day? We do have one more question for you from Pete Manhart.
When do you change your projections of yield per acre? When would you start doing that, if
right.
you do that?
We have not published a yield or production estimate for the summer row crops. The first estimate will be in our August 11th crop production report. We'll have the yield and production forecast for all the major row crops, and then those would be updated on a monthly basis in the crop production report through November.
Greg, we appreciate you being with us.
Okay.
Greg Thessen is with the National Agricultural Statistics Service. He's based in Washington, D.C. And now a final word from our panelist, Pete Manhart.
Be safe out there in all your summer jobs, and we hope you have a great summer and be ready for that great big harvest, we hope.
Ed Dunn?
Be ready to sell weather rallies and watch your basis at your elevators. They're going to slip quickly once we get past the end of July.
And Matt Bennett.
I definitely want to sell weather rallies, either selling cash or buying puts to protect the downside. So, I don't know. I'm still bearish beans and probably a little bullish corn.
Our thanks to Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, and Matt Bennett, who you just heard from Bennett Grain down in Windsor, Illinois. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, the weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. You have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. On the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.